This episode is brought to you by the GoDaddy coupon code CJCSIG99C. Get a new.com domain for 99 cents. That is 93% off the regular price. If you don't need a .com, share it with someone who just might. Small business owners, musicians, artists, designers, you name it, your pals will benefit from knowing it's out there. Share the code CJCSIG99C with them. Share it online to be a good citizen. Learn more and see other codes at scottsigler.com/GoDaddy. And now, on with our story. Welcome to the serialized audiobook, Earthcore. Written by New York Times bestselling novelist Scott Sigler. Narrated by Ray Porter. Produced by Steve Rickyberg. Earthcore is also available in print as an ebook and as a full-length audiobook. If you want the whole story without waiting, grab one of these formats from the links at scottsigler.com/earthcore. Hello, junkies! Hey! New stuff is out. Hunter Hunterson & Sons War Journal Volume 1 is now out for Kindle and for Audible, and I am the one who read the audiobook, so you can enjoy that. I call this collection Beverly Hillbillies Meets the Ghostbusters. It's kind of an episodic thing. There's three stories in the first War Journal, and each one is a story of the Hunterson clan, fun horror comedy about a monster-stomping red state family transplanted to the bluest of blue cities, San Francisco, where they whoop some ass on the supernatch. It's very fun. Learn more at scottsigler.com/hunter, where there are also ordering links. And also, guys, you heard it here first, a new short story announcement. You can go learn about this one at scottsigler.com/wastelands to read about the anthology Wastelands 3, which is due out June 3rd, 2019. I'm super excited about this because my short story is called The Last Child, and it is a tale from the Generations trilogy. I would say the Generations trilogy universe, but the Generations trilogy is part of the Siglerverse. So Alive, Alight, and Alone all tie in with the modern day novels, with the GFL, with everything. I can't quite tell you how yet, but someday soon, you will know. The Last Child is a brutal, savage survival tale, and it gets nasty. Also in that anthology with me, Richard Kadrey, Jonathan Mayberry, Veronica Roth, and more. And in March, the anthology Unfettered 3 is out, and it contains my story, Throwdown. This is one of my medieval America stories. It is not in the Siglerverse. It's a separate timeline. This story, Throwdown, is a sequel to Victim with a capital V, which was in Unfettered 2. You can learn more about that anthology at scottsigler.com/unfettered-3, the number 3. Woo! So much good stuff coming your way. Let's get you caught up in Earthcore, and then we're going to go punch a booger bag. Previously on Earthcore, Connell and the others are trapped in the tunnels, and they've realized that the only way out is through. They need to reach the dense mass and cross over to the other side in order to, hopefully, reach the Linus Highway, the path Angus and Randy took to secretly enter the tunnels in the first place. Meanwhile, Kayla Myers continues to stalk the group, looking for a chance to cut them all down. And, up on the surface, Sonny McGinnis has to find the courage to face up to his fears. Next on Earthcore, episode number 33.
Chapter 30. 15,798 feet below the surface. 8:09 a.m. Her fingers traced detailed carvings. Such delicate work, such masterful beauty from such a savage race.
"Veronica, we can't keep stopping," Connell said. "If Angus gets too far ahead of us, we lose the scrambler's effect."
He sounded pissed, on the edge of screaming at her. She couldn't blame him. She wanted to move, understood that she was causing a problem, but The carvings might hold the answers that she'd sought for 7 years at Cerro Chalten. When they'd left the small cavern, Veronica understood what Randy and Angus had been talking about. Silver bugs, yes, all over the place, but they had walked erratically, bumping into the walls, stumbling over one another. Many didn't walk at all, their round bodies resting on the tunnel floor, legs waving randomly. They looked drunk. Angus and Randy had set an aggressive pace. Everyone kept up, even O'Doyle. After only a few minutes of walking, though, Veronica saw occasional rock-to-pie graffiti on the tunnel walls and ceiling. The same disturbing paintings of boneless limbs and furious colors, all the more horrible now that she knew what those images represented. The closer the party moved toward the dense mass, the more packed together the paintings became. Halfway there, the tunnel stopped looking like a rough cave and started looking like a tube, a masterpiece of carving that rivaled the stonework of medieval churches, even the Egyptian pyramids. Smooth walls curved up into a smooth ceiling. The floor became flat as a pancake. Wild paintings covered every inch, even more chaotic than before. A few hundred feet further, storytelling tiles lined the tube's smooth walls, tiles similar to what she'd seen in the picture cavern. Up there, the image of the mountain appeared over and over, a backdrop to most of what the Chaltelians had been trying to communicate. In the tube, the mountain was nowhere to be seen. Another shape seemed to have replaced it. Shortly after the tiles started, the paintings became sparse again, then faded out altogether. Why? Why would the graffiti stop? It was almost as if the vandals, for lack of a better word, were unwilling to go further down this tunnel. Were they afraid of what lay in the dense mass cavern? She ran her fingertips over a tile featuring that shape, wondering what it meant. "Rani, snap out of it," Sanji said, an edge in his voice, maybe even more so than in Connell's. "We have to go. Leibrand and O'Doyle are getting ahead of us." Veronica glanced down the hall. O'Doyle, leaning heavily on Leibrand, but farther ahead than they should have been. Couldn't they wait a few seconds? No, they couldn't. With his wound, they had to keep moving. She turned back to the wall. "I just need a second, Dad." She pointed to the group of tiles in front of her, at a specific shape she'd been seeing. "See this image? It's everywhere." To their credit, both her father and Connell looked. Connell touched it.
"This kind of fountain pen-shaped thing?"
Sanji shook his head.
"More like a cartridge with a bullet on each end."
Both descriptions were in the ballpark. Long, thick, widest in the middle, ends tapered down to rounded points.
"Everywhere we see that shape, it's at the start of a sequence," Veronica said. "When we see the bullet shape, the next panel in the sequence shows hundreds of tiny rock-to-pie."
Connell leaned closer.
"Tiny. Maybe they're children, like the ones Sanji danced with."
Sanji nodded and tapped a fingertip on the image.
"What if the shape is an egg sac of some kind, or even a nest? We've seen almost nothing of these creatures. They could secrete something that hardens, like spiders and silk. Or maybe these are ritualistic nurseries of some kind that they built with their own hands."
"Tentacles," Connell said. "Own tentacles."
Sanji nodded.
"Own tentacles. I give you that the Roctopi probably didn't build the silver bugs, but if they can use knives, they can use tools."
Veronica wondered if the bullet-shaped symbol was representative of a physical thing or a metaphorical one. Even though the robots were advanced tech, these carvings seemed to have a mystical feel to them, perhaps indicative of a primitive culture.
"Wait a minute. I recognize the year. Not our year, I mean the date within their culture. The images coincide with their 0 year. That means the egg sac image could be connected to their origin story, their equivalent of the Garden of Eden. Maybe..."
Her words trailed off. She heard something in the darkness behind them. Click, click. Click, click, click. Three headlamps swung back fast, landed on burnished metal.
A silver bug, round body on the ceiling, spindly legs spread out, hooked feet clinging to carvings. The wedge-shaped protrusion pointed at Sanji, then Connell, then her. Movements firm. Precise. If it had been drunk, it sobered up in a fucking hurry. Another silver bug scrambled across the ceiling, stopped shortly behind the first. They began to jerk up and down. A third joined the line. From far down the hall, Veronica heard the sound of dry leaves scraping against concrete. "We fell out of the scrambler's range," Connell said. "Move!" Veronica ran down the hall, the two men close behind. 8:12 a.m. Angus started to step over the twitching silver bug, then changed his mind. He picked it up by a long leg, lifted it. It was a little like picking up an Alaskan king crab. It dangled there, legs curling slowly, randomly. "Put it down," Randy said. "We have to keep going." Angus glared at him. "Oh, I'll put it down, all right." He whipped the silver bug against the wall. Randy winced at the sound of metal ringing against stone. Angus whipped it again, cracked a graffiti-covered bas-relief tile, sent half of the barbell-shaped carving flying. On the fourth strike, the thin limb tore free. The now three-legged silver bug fell to the floor, even more wobbly than it had been before. Randy looked worried. "We're making too much noise," he said. Sometimes that guy wore on Angus's last nerve, and those stupid rec specs. Get eye surgery already. They made Randy look like a retarded bug. "Know how we'll make less noise? If you have a nice cup of shut the fuck up." Randy shook his head, pulled out the tablet, and checked the map. Oh, he wanted to show off, did he? Wanted to rub it in that Connell had given him the map instead of Angus? Connell Kirkland was a selfish, manipulative cocksucker. His asshole actions were predictable. They fit a pattern of privileged bully douchebaggery. But Randy's behavior? Disappointing, and more than a bit mystifying. Randy had always been easy to get along with. Not as smart as Angus, but smart enough to know good sense when he heard it. Now? Now the guy was talking all the time, talking out of turn. Far worse, he was listening to the wrong people, listening to stupid people. "We're almost there," Randy said. Angus sighed. "Wow, so glad I have a genius reading the map I made. Otherwise, I'd have never figured that one out." Randy ignored the comment. The two men moved down the hall. Not a tunnel anymore, not with this craftsmanship. Stone carved so smoothly, Angus almost wondered if someone had created a laser drill before him. Yet that made no sense, because these halls were made centuries ago. No, this was likely the result of generation after generation of master craftsmen chiseling perfect paths through solid limestone. An intersection. Angus and Randy stopped. A hallway curved off to the left and to the right, walls decorated with graffiti-painted bas-relief tiles. In the hallway to the left, a pair of scrambled silver bugs seemed to be trying to drunkenly crawl over each other. Angus pulled a motion sensor from his bag, set it next to the wall. "Only three of these left," he said. "How are Mr. Giant Cockface and the others doing?" Randy zoomed in on the map, frowned. "Lagging behind. Looks like Connell, Veronica, and Sanji fell out of scrambler range, but they're in it now and running to catch up." "Unfucking believable," Angus said. "They fell out of range? For fuck's sake, how dumb do you have to be?" Randy said nothing. Yeah, he knew it was stupid. Wasn't bothering to defend them. That was better. That was the old Randy, the one smart enough to listen. Maybe he would listen now. "These gimps are slowing us down," Angus said. Randy's eyes hardened. "They're hurt. Cry me a river. Ever heard of survival of the fittest? I'm not going to die down here waiting for them to catch up." Angus glanced back up the hall, made sure O'Doyle and Librand were out of earshot. They were far back, limping closer. He turned back to Randy. "We saved them once. Let's haul balls and get out of here."
It's not like we didn't tell them the way out. They don't need us to find the Linus Highway. They don't need the map either.
Randy squared his shoulders, the look on his face so different from the man who'd always been eager to appease. Now he looked disgusted, even worse, dismissive.
If you want to go, go, he said. But you'll go without me and without the map.
The map Angus had fucking invented?
He felt his hands clench into fists.
Give me that map or I will kick your ass.
Randy sneered, and in that moment, Angus thought he looked like Kirkland. Looked like every bully that had ever pushed Angus around.
I'm tired of your crap, Randy said. I was wrong about you. Maybe I've always been wrong about you.
He turned and walked down the hall. Angus stared at his back.
That motherfucker, that cocksucker. So angry he couldn't think, could barely see.
He heard Librand and O'Doyle coming closer. Angus jogged to catch up to Randy. 8:14 a.m. Such a tiny little nest. A big boulder with a cracked notch at the bottom, creating a shadowy overhang. She dug into the stony ground, making it deep enough to lay down in and not be seen. Just wide enough for a canvas cot, a half-empty case of water bottles, a few boxes of military rations, and a sealed plastic bin.
Don't you want to know what's in there?
He didn't. He had to. Sonny tried to open the lid's plastic latches, but his hands shook so bad the fingers rattled together. Was this what he could look forward to in the years to come? Be palsied like Grandma McGinnis? If he didn't hurry, he wouldn't live long enough to find out. He ripped at the latches, a burst of rage and panic that twisted one, bent it.
Oh, shit,
he said, looking at where the blue plastic had folded with a white line. No covering that up. When Miss Murder came back, she'd know. He opened the lid. Inside, boxes of ammo, a gun cleaning kit, bits of electronics, energy bars, and a purse. Sonny grabbed it, opened it. He stopped, scanned the horizon. No sign of her. Inside the purse, lipstick, keys, single stick of Wrigley's gum, some lint, car keys. A small, spiral-bound pad of paper. He flipped the cover open, read,
"Possible survivors, Connell, the science lady and her Indian dad, O'Doyle and a bunch of guards, Angus, Randy. All those bones and body parts in the camp. Could that many people still be alive? Maybe. Maybe they were all down in the mine when the attack hit."
Sonny put the pad back in the purse. When he did, his fingers felt something in the liner. A tug opened up a hidden pocket. Inside were ID badges. Carrie Thomas, private investigator. Melissa Wilson, detective, Salt Lake City Police Department. Harriet McGuire, FBI. Maggie Smith, reporter, Mining World Magazine. And driver's licenses. Miriam Van Doren, Vermont. Connie Browning, California. Kayla Myers, Texas. Were any of these identities real? They all looked perfect, legit. Who the hell was this woman? She'd hiked up to the other entrance. Was she going into the tunnels to kill the survivors just like she'd killed Cho? A sudden thought. Sonny had to go after her, save those people.
No fucking way,
he said, the reaction powerful, instant, shaming. Even in the prime of his youth, he probably wouldn't have had the balls to go after her, and he wasn't young anymore, not even close. If there were survivors, Sonny wasn't brave enough to help them. At least, not down there, he couldn't. One last look through the binoculars. Sonny scanned the landscape, looking for any sign of Miss Murder. Nothing. He put fake IDs in one pocket. He put the car keys in the other.
Fuck you, you psycho bitch.
He put the purse back in the bin, put everything back in place, then he quietly slipped out of her warren. Sonny knew where she'd gone, up the same trail he'd taken to the mesa where Anderson and his friends had gone in. He could move the Land Rover closer to that spot, find a place where he could watch the mesa.
If Kirkland or any of the others came out, Sonny could pick them up halfway down the trail. If that woman came out, he'd be far enough away to drive off before she could get anywhere near him.
"Get them out of there, Kirkland," he said. "Get them out of that mountain. I promise you I'll be waiting."
8:16 a.m. The Linus Highway went down. The footprints did not. They went left into a tunnel that was little more than a crack in the wall. She'd barely be able to turn around in there, not even enough room to use the Galil. If she was wedged in there and those living lava lamps came after her. Kayla holstered the Steyr, pulled the little industrial computer from a pouch and examined the map. This branch led to the left, one of many between here and the dense mass. Other tunnels, too. Branches off branches off branches. Hundreds of ways to go, if not thousands. This tunnel system, staggering in size and complexity. The biggest maze the world had ever seen. No telling how old these footprints were. The little prick and his bestest butt buddy could have been here minutes ago, could have been here days ago. Another very real possibility. What if those two weren't even in the caves anymore at all? She might follow their tracks for days and never lay eyes on them. Only two exits on the map, and one of them, the shaft, completely destroyed. Angus and Randy had come in via the Linus Highway. Odds were they'd come out the same way. And the highway led straight to the dense mass, the goal of Connell Kirkland and everyone who might be with him. Angus and Randy weren't the only ones she needed to kill. She put the map away, checked the Marco Polo device. Still no signals. Those footprints, so enticing. But following them, that wasn't the smart choice. Kayla stowed the Marco Polo device. She drew the Steyr. She continued down the Linus Highway. 8:24 a.m. The noise, loud, echoing off the stone carvings and flat floor. It reminded Randy of a phrase he'd heard in college. Give 1,000 monkeys 1,000 computer keyboards and an infinite amount of time and they'll produce the works of Shakespeare. Something like that. He didn't care about monkeys or Shakespeare. He didn't care about keyboards either, just the sounds they made. The clacks, the clicks. So loud it was almost deafening. How many silver bugs would it take to make that much racket? He'd find out in just a few more feet when he reached the next intersection, because it sounded like the noise was coming from there, from the hallway on the right. Angus tugging on his arm.
"Dude, fuck this. We'll find another way."
Randy pulled his arm free. He didn't even want that bastard touching him.
"No, we're almost there. Straight is the shortest way. And the scrambler's working, isn't it?"
Angus pulled out the walkie-talkie, nodded. If the scrambler was working, did they have anything to fear? Randy moved closer. If Angus didn't want to come, he could stay behind. How had he been friends with that man for so long? Followed him around, made excuses for him? Randy had wanted a friend, a real friend, so bad that he'd ignored what his eyes showed him, what his ears told him. Not anymore. A silverbug stumbled out of the hallway that led right, half crawling, half rolling. Randy's headlamp beam played off the burnished shell. He watched it for a moment. There could be danger here. He had to know if it was safe for O'Doyle and the others. He took a big breath, then stepped forward and peeked around the corner. His headlamp beam showed something that didn't make sense. The walls, they were moving. The ceiling, too. The floor looked like a shimmering wave of metallic snow. Silver bugs everywhere, packed in so tight he couldn't see the stone between them. Angus came up, also peeked around the corner.
"Holy shit," he said. "What are they doing?"
Randy shook his head.
"Maybe they were doing something specific before the scrambler hit them. Something coordinated."
The hallway dead-ended about 50 feet in, shimmered with the thick coat of the robots. Was this an alcove, or maybe a hall that hadn't been finished yet? A silverbug dropped from the ceiling, dangled by one long leg, then fell, crashing into others. Its round body rolled down. It started to crawl, or tried to, sliding over the silver bugs below it. "Let's go," Angus said. No, not yet. Randy wanted, needed, to know what they were doing. There was one way to find out. "Shut off the scrambler." Angus stood, appalled. "Are you fucking insane? I'm not shutting the goddamn thing off, not for a second. What the fuck is wrong with you, Randy? You better pull your head out of your ass. Pronto, Kemosabe, or..." Randy turned, grabbed Angus by the throat, and squeezed lightly. Angus froze, stared, wide eyes blinking. "Things aren't like they used to be," Randy said. "From now on, I tell you what to do, and you'll do it. Understand?" Angus tried to shake his head, but Randy squeezed tighter. Tears filled Angus's eyes. He was afraid. Afraid of Randy. It was exciting. It felt good. Angus had treated him like shit for so long. Randy had eaten that shit with a spoon and begged for seconds. Not anymore. He reached to Angus's belt, pulled out the walkie-talkie. He let go of the smaller man's neck. Angus took a step away, rubbing at his throat. A wash of guilt. That was no way to treat someone, not even Angus. Randy had been bullied enough times in his life to know there was no excuse to do it to someone else. He would make it up to Angus. Later. There were good people down here. Randy needed to do whatever it took to make sure they were safe. He pinched the volume knob between forefinger and thumb. He turned it past zero, felt the click as it shut off. 1,000 monkeys stopped typing. Dead silence. The silver bugs didn't move. Randy looked at the walkie-talkie, made sure he'd actually turned it off. He had.
"They're recalibrating," Angus whispered.
The noise hammered back all at once, someone hitting the power on a TV that already had the volume maxed out. The machines burst into action.
"Turn it back on," Angus said quietly.
"Now." Randy started to, then stopped. The silver bugs didn't seem to notice him. No wedge-shaped heads pointed his way. A few seconds more. The living sheet of platinum writhed with activity, machines moving so fast he couldn't focus on a single one for more than a second. A new sound joined the familiar clicking, the rapid-fire popping, chipping sound of breaking rock. So much movement, a swimming pool full of ants. On his left, a cluster of them pressing their wedge-shaped heads to the wall, to one of the carved tiles. The wedges moved so fast they blurred, smashing into the rock, kicking up a cloud of stone chips. Down on the floor, silverbugs scurried over one another. Their wedge-shaped heads did something different. They pecked at the loose stone, and every time they did, the loose stone was no longer there.
"The machines built this place," Angus said. "The tunnels, maybe the caverns, all of it."
A silverbug stopped chipping. It rotated. The wedge pointed toward Randy. Then another silverbug turned. And another. The scrambler was ripped from his hands. Angus turned it on, cranked the volume knob all the way up.
"I'll just hold on to this," he said, and jammed it back into his belt. "Randy, I used to think you were smart, but you know what? You're a fucking retard."
"That's not a cool thing to call someone."
"Now is the time to be politically correct. Double fucking retard. Like that better?"
The silver bugs drunk again. The one that had first looked at Randy slipped from the wall. Two split feet reached out, grabbed the legs of others to try to stay up, but all three fell to the floor, exposing the tile they'd been carving. Randy stared at it in disbelief. Not a carving of Roctopi, or tribesmen, or deer, or anything else. Modern people, wearing mining helmets. 7 of them.
"Oh my God," Angus said. He pointed. "Randy, those carvings..."
They were stylized, but their likenesses unmistakable. Little Angus, tall Connell, muscular O'Doyle, Veronica's ponytail, Libran's bulk. And there, on the very end, Randy's wraparound plastic glasses. The carvings were like a sentence, reading left to right. He looked at the next panel. Blank. The two after that, blank as well. The sequence wasn't finished, but that didn't matter. Veronica had explained that the tiles were like a sentence. Randy had seen similar sequences up in the picture cavern, knew how that sentence was supposed to end. Over the noise of 1,000 monkeys typing, another sound. A woman, yelling. Randy and Angus turned, saw Librand helping O'Doyle hop down the hallway. Not that far behind them, Connell, Veronica, and Sanji.
Run!
Librand shouted. The Roctopi are coming again!
That's it for episode number 33. Oh, snap! Here come the Roctopi again. It's like, here comes the rain again, except it's, here comes the Roctopi again. It's a lovely song. In the next episode, we get to discover something big. Something really, really big. But which of our characters will be alive to see it with us? Find out next week on Earthcore episode number 34. Until then, we will talk to you all real soon. You have been listening to Earthcore, written by Scott Sigler, read by Ray Porter, produced by Steve Rickyberg. Copyright 2017 by Empty Set Entertainment. All rights reserved. Theme music is by the band Amps and Volts.